This is NBC Nightly News, Tuesday, March 11th, with John Chancellor reporting from the NBC News Center in New York and David Brinkley's Journal from Washington.
Good evening. In Phnom Penh, Cambodia today, there was a sweeping shakeup in the government, perhaps designed to get talks started with the rebels there. A small number of Americans, some British civilians, and some Philippine nationals were evacuated. The shelling of the airport continued, stopping some of the American planes bringing rice to the city. Back in Washington, there were indications that the U.S. Senate might approve some aid money, but that came too late to dispel the gloom of the day. The government shakeup brought about the resignation of the Cambodian commander-in-chief, but it left Lon Nol still in place as president. And he said today in a memorable phrase, "Political infighting has become increasingly critical, and we lack cooperation within our infrastructure." And the fighting goes on. Here's a report on that side of things from Jack Worth.
Approximately 6 miles north of Phnom Penh is the town of Trek Canal. It's one of the key sectors in the defense of the capital. The rebels surround the town and are strongly entrenched across the river. Recently, a new government commander was appointed to take over this area. Since the insurgents were pressing his troops on all sides, he decided to counterattack. Troops were moved in from other positions where there was less fighting. Two squadrons of armored personnel carriers were brought up. An ammunition convoy was assembled and ordered to stand by. Finally, when the troops were in place, the operation started. Helicopter gunships were called in. Government artillery shelled the enemy position. The APCs and the infantry advanced. According to government intelligence reports, they faced almost 2,000 men. The rebels were well supplied, aggressive, and they had artillery. The government forces had 4 battalions, almost as many men as the enemy. But the one real advantage the government troops had was their APCs. Operations like this one use up huge quantities of ammunition. The government troops must count on the American airlift to keep them supplied. Field officers say that in many sectors, the insurgents have fire superiority. During one phase of this operation, one of the government artillery batteries was down to its last 6 rounds of ammunition. But the government seems to have decided that without aggressive leadership and offensive operations like this one, they will simply be ground down, and the circle will continue to tighten around Phnom Penh. Jack Worth for NBC News.
The number of Americans who were flown out of Cambodia today was described as small, mostly wives and children. We don't know where they were flown to, but it may have been Bangkok. Other foreigners left Phnom Penh today, and here's a report on that story.
At noon today, nearly 3 dozen people showed up with their luggage at the British Embassy. They were either British subjects or came from a Commonwealth country. The British decision to evacuate followed fresh reports of new enemy advances around Phnom Penh and heavier and more accurate rocket and artillery attacks on the city's airport. Many who left had lived in Cambodia for years. One, an Australian relief worker, took a 10-month-old Cambodian boy with her. She adopted him last week after both the baby's parents were killed in a rocket attack. A Royal Air Force plane waited at the airport to take these people to Singapore. Embassy officials said this flight would be the last one. The embassy shut down, and some Cambodian members of the staff came to say goodbye. Then, just after a convoy of cars carrying the evacuees left for the airport, several enemy rockets hit only a few hundred yards from the British embassy. No one was killed, but several Cambodians were wounded, including a soldier who was taken to a hospital. In past crises, the British stayed when others left, and so their decision to leave today was another indication of just how grave the situation has become. Phil Brady, NBC News.
In South Vietnam, across the border, there was fighting in a lot of places today. There was more house-to-house fighting in the provincial capital of Ban Mae Thuit, and 9 Americans remain trapped in that city. Back in Washington, the White House said no Americans have been killed or wounded in the new fighting, and the Pentagon said the level of that fighting does not represent a major offensive. Also on the program tonight, we'll have the details on that move in the U.S. Senate to vote more aid for Cambodia. From Detroit, we'll have a report on some good news for laid-off automobile workers. And from the Sierra Madre Mountains of Mexico, we'll have a special report on a new connection supplying heroin to addicts in the United States. Those stories and others in a moment.
Today, many people make heavy use of flashlights, radios, and toys, so they want more power than an ordinary flashlight battery can provide. But they don't want all the power of an alkaline cell. For them, EverReady created the EverReady heavy-duty battery, the in-between battery. In heavy use, it far outlasts ordinary batteries, yet it costs only a little more. EverReady wants you to know.
Ever have feelings of gas and heartburn, acid indigestion, sour stomach? None of these is an anti-gas ingredient. And gas, along with excess acid, can often cause your distress. Compared to these simple antacids, Digel is the more complete stomach medicine because Digel has both antacid and anti-gas ingredients. Compare Digel to any simple antacid. Digel is anti-gas and anti-acid. It's the more complete stomach medicine. Mint or now lemon orange.
You're hot tonight.
Yeah. So's this pipe.
Maybe it's your tobacco. Try mine.
Sir Walter Raleigh Special Mixture.
Sir Walter Raleigh Special Mixture, a blend of Kentucky Burley specially cut to pack right and smoke cooler.
Hey, this special mixture really smokes cool.
With flavor to spare.
Quality pipe tobaccos from Sir Walter Raleigh. Special mixture, regular and aromatic.
There were some curious things going on in Washington today. A subcommittee of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, which is normally a dovish group, voted 4-3 for $125 million in additional military aid for Cambodia. At the same time, Republican John Tower of Texas, normally a hawkish senator, said that aid or no aid, the collapse of the current Cambodian government is imminent and could come within days. And the administration won a small, unexpected victory in a House subcommittee considering aid for Cambodia. Here's the congressional story from Catherine Mackin.
Fighting Congress over Cambodian aid is not over, but what happened today was a major interim victory for President Ford. A House Foreign Affairs subcommittee stalemated on what to do and put off a final decision until Thursday, which was a small but significant victory for the president. On the Senate side, a Senate Foreign Relations subcommittee chaired by Senator Hubert Humphrey surprised the administration and Humphrey himself by voting to continue military, economic, and medical aid to Cambodia.
The senators felt very sincerely that they should give this much extra time in the hopes that something might work out. It was a one-shot proposition, and they made it very clear. If I thought it was going to give any extra, that the extra time would have helped, I would have voted likewise. I just don't think it's going to help. I think we'll be right back where we were, only maybe with more trouble.
The Senate subcommittee vote seems to run just opposite of mail from the public. John Sparkman is chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. 75% who write him oppose the aid. Paul Laxalt, Republican of Nevada, is getting up to 300 letters a week. 90% oppose the aid. Charles Percy has gotten 3,000 letters in 3 weeks. 98% are against the aid. John Tower, following a luncheon briefing Defense Secretary Schlesinger gave to all Senate Republicans, had this to say about Cambodia.
I would think that realistically, anybody would have to make the assessment that militarily it is not salvageable, because that would it would mean a massive effort which we are not prepared to undertake.
This was the view all over Capitol Hill early today, that aid to Cambodia was dead. But that was before the votes were taken. Now aid to Cambodia seems to be very much alive. Catherine Mackin, NBC News, Washington.
And for the White House reaction to this mixture of news, here's John Cochran.
A White House official called the subcommittee's vote good news. Before the vote, Defense Secretary Schlesinger was at the White House, and he indicated the Cambodian government could get by with less than the $222 million President Ford had requested.
Well, the $222 million included some equipment. A lesser number will provide them with adequate ammunition.
Administration officials insist there is hope for a negotiated settlement in Cambodia if Phnom Penh can hold out until the rainy season, about 3 months away. White House spokesman Ron Nessen says the insurgents are having manpower and supply problems and may be willing to negotiate this summer. But Defense Secretary Schlesinger says the rebel forces are in far better shape this year than they were a year ago. And other administration officials say the only hope for a settlement will come if the insurgents are convinced that Congress will vote military aid for Cambodia, not just this year, but next year as well. John Cochran, NBC News, the White House. In Lisbon today, right-wing Portuguese military rebels bombed an artillery barracks near the city's airport, and right-wing paratroopers surrounded the barracks. The rebellion was put down in a matter of hours by forces loyal to the left-wing military government. And when it was over, the Portuguese chief of security forces hinted that the United States was involved in the attempted coup. He said that the American ambassador had better leave the country after what happened today. Former President Antonio de Spínola, the conservative general who led the revolt against the old dictatorship, fled into Spain today with other right-wing sympathizers. The response of troops loyal to the rebellion was prompt and definitive. Heavily armed units were deployed throughout the city following the bombing, and roadblocks were set up to stop the rebels, and there were some casualties. But it was evident that the government had overwhelming support. It got its troop carriers into the streets in numbers large enough to discourage any prolonged fighting. Portugal's premier went on the radio to urge the people to close ranks with what he called the loyal armed forces. The bombings setting off the rebellion were carried out by two Air Force training planes. Apparently, only two bombs were dropped, and damage was light. Tonight, the government has the situation in Portugal under tight control. Secretary of State Henry Kissinger, seen here with the Turkish chief of staff, said today in Ankara that the Greek and Turkish Cypriots have agreed to resume talks on the future of Cyprus soon, but just how soon was not disclosed. Then Kissinger flew back to Israel for another go at trying to arrange another withdrawal agreement between Israel and Egypt. Before Kissinger returned, Israeli Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin held a meeting of the Israeli cabinet to draft a response to the Egyptian proposal. The Jerusalem Post reported a split between Rabin and Defense Minister Shimon Peres over the Israeli stance. No details. In Dublin, Ireland today, members of the European Common Market reached agreement on ways to keep Britain in the European Economic Community. According to Reuters news agency, Britain wanted a cut in the amount it is required to put into the Common Market budget, and there will be a cut, but not as much as the British wanted. The compromise was reached after 2 days of talks.
Jim, when you were completely gray, you did look much older. You look so much better with just a touch of gray.
Grecian Formula 16. It's practically clear. As easy to use as water. No mess. Use it every day until you slowly, gradually get rid of just as much gray as you want. Some of it, most of it, or all of it. Then once a week or so to keep it that way.
I use Lady Grecian Formula, and he doesn't even know it.
Grecian Formula 16 and Lady Grecian Formula.
This is my wife, and I love her. I love her a lot. And I'll tell you one big reason why. She thinks enough of herself to take really good care of herself.
Well, I just don't think you should let yourself go. So I eat right, exercise, and I take Geritol every day. That way I know I get the iron and vitamins I need.
Geritol. More than twice the iron of any ordinary supplement and some very important vitamins.
My wife, she cares about herself. And I love her for it.
In Detroit today, General Motors said that almost 7,000 workers now on indefinite layoff will be back at work next month. The company added that projected production for the second quarter will be increased by about 7%. Worker recalls are now general in the auto industry. That doesn't mean a boom in automobile production and sales, but it is an improvement. Most auto workers have been supported by unemployment compensation and supplemental funds, which almost equal their full-time pay. But they were glad to get back to work nonetheless. Mike Jackson has more on the story.
43,000 auto workers returned to work this week, recalled after being laid off, some for several months.
There are more people making cars now than at any time since last November. Those called back this week are happy about it.
I need it. I need to get back. It was kind of rough just collecting unemployment and subpay.
I feel great being back, you know. It never have been really rough because we was all kept unemployment going, you know.
Ford, Chrysler, and General Motors have resumed production of small cars, the models they had overproduced last fall. All but two of the nation's assembly plants are now operating.
Many of the new cars that are being assembled this week were ordered under the various factory rebate programs. The workers fear that once those orders are filled, once dealer showrooms are stocked up, that the factories will close down again and they'll be out of work.
The auto companies have made no promises about how long the callbacks will last. They do say they plan to increase production this month to stock up for a traditional spring rush. But they're assessing their prospects day by day, and they'll cut back again if they have to.
We're able to look at our daily sales rates. We're able to look at our inventories and the trend with respect to inventories, up, down, whatever. And our retail order backlog, which predicts what we need to build to fill the orders we have in hand, and are able to adjust up and down our production accordingly.
Despite the surge in production this week and the hopes of automakers that still more new cars will be sold this spring, most analysts say there will be no major increase in demand for new cars until fall, when next year's models come out. In the meantime, almost a third of the nation's auto workers, 215,000 people, are still out of work, with little prospect of being called back. Mike Jackson, NBC News, Detroit.
In Washington today, the House of Representatives decided not to test its strength on the oil tariff issue. The House voted not to vote on the president's veto of a bill suspending the oil tariffs, and instead it sent that to the Ways and Means Committee, where it will sit for a while. At the same time, there were reports that progress is being made in an attempt to work out an energy program compromise between Congress and the administration. But progress on a bill to cut taxes appears now to be bogged down in the Senate. David Brinkley's Journal tonight deals with what's going on in the Senate over taxes and oil. David?
Weeks ago, the president asked Congress for a big tax cut to get some money back into the public's pockets and to get some people back to work. The House responded and voted a cut of $21 billion, which sounds like a lot, but it's only about 7% of what Washington spends in a year. Well, now, the Senate seems willing to cut even more, maybe $30 billion. But several of its members want to include in the same vote a repeal of the oil industry's depletion allowance. While that may be to them a pleasing prospect to do to the oil industry what they have wanted to do for years, it certainly will mean a delay in reducing taxes for the public. A delay while the unemployment runs on, business declines, and George Meany, among others, says we're in a depression. It could even lead to a filibuster, and that would not be an attractive sight. The Senate tied up with that while the economy declines and 75 million taxpayers wait to get a little of their own money back. It would not be the Senate's finest hour. So some are now talking of a cut of $30 billion in taxes and dealing with the depletion allowance later as a separate question. One reason being that the Senate wants an Easter vacation on March 21st, 10 days from now. And President Ford tonight was said to be worried that they would leave on vacation without voting the tax cut. The White House said if the Senate did leave without settling this, the president would find that, in his word, unbelievable. John?
The U.S. Civil Rights Commission issued a report today which says it has found substantial progress in the desegregation of schools in the South, but that school desegregation progress in the North has been, in the words of that report, minimal. The commission urged President Ford to pool all federal authority in this area to effect the strongest possible federal enforcement of the constitutional mandate to desegregate our public schools.
I just have to tell you about Morningstar Farms' newest idea, breakfast strips. They have no cholesterol and no animal fat. That's because, like other good foods from Morningstar Farms, they're made from textured vegetable protein. And I have to tell you, they're great if you're on a budget, because they cost less than bacon. Oh, and they don't shrink as much as bacon. And one package gives you about as many delicious strips as a pound of bacon. Oh, and I have to tell you, they're a pleasure to prepare. They fry up quickly in a little vegetable oil, so there's never a lot of messy drippings to clean up afterwards. Do they taste like crispy? delicious bacon? That I don't have to tell you.
Mm. Isn't that delicious, huh?
Good. Good.
Oh,
this way, too.
All right,
Hon.
Thank you.
Give Susie some from Morningstar Farms.
Look for breakfast strips now in the Morningstar Farms section of your grocer's freezer.
Excuse me, what's in your pocket?
Oh, my secretary.
Oh, come on.
No, Lanier's new pocket dictating machine, the pocket secretary. I take it everywhere. Helps me get more done.
So here. Tiny.
Listen.
Pick up tickets for Acapulco Saturday.
Acapulco? My Aunt Eleanor went there.
Yeah, you say something.
My name is Bernadette, Klondike 52763. I love Mexico and I can cook.
You're just my height.
I'm stooping.
Forget it.
Get more done with Lanier's pocket secretary in the yellow pages under dictating machines.
Finally this evening, a nightly news special report on heroin coming into this country called the Mexican Connection. There used to be something called the French Connection. Opium grown in Turkey turned into heroin in France and sold in this country. That's been stopped, but it's been replaced to a considerable degree by opium grown and processed into heroin in Mexico. American officials estimate that two-thirds of the heroin sold in this country comes from Mexico. Ira Silverman of our staff has produced this special report on that important story. Thousands of farmers who used to grow corn and tend goats on the slopes of the Sierra Madre Mountains now have a new cash crop. Opium. NBC News filmed this opium field and others from a Mexican government spotter plane. Mexican and U.S. narcotics agents have photographed 2,500 opium fields in these mountains, all within 400 miles of the American border. The Mexican government says it wants to destroy these fields and the labs that process this opium into heroin. But the job isn't easy. The only practical way to reach the opium fields is by helicopter. But flying in these mountains is hazardous. From three recently established bases, helicopters supplied by the United States fly in Mexican soldiers to destroy crops ready for harvest. Sometimes the soldiers are shot at by the opium growers. But most often, the farmers just run away when they see the helicopters coming. This raid was carried out high in the mountains in the state of Chihuahua. A U.S. narcotics agent and an NBC News film crew accompanied the soldiers. Under an agreement between Mexico and the United States, there are U.S. narcotics agents and officials throughout Mexico acting as advisors to the Mexican government and conducting their own intelligence operations.
The opium poppy is a three-month crop. The opium cultivator will make an incision on this opium pod. The white substance that you see oozing out then becomes the opium, which has been converted into heroin.
The soldiers destroyed the mature opium plants by knocking them down with sticks, and they cut irrigation lines into the fields. It's slow going. The soldiers aren't able to clear more than a field or two a day. American officials have urged the use of chemical sprays, but the Mexican government has refused to allow spraying, fearing its long-range effect on the soil. Government officials acknowledge that despite their efforts, most of the opium is in fact harvested and processed into heroin. Officials say there are too many fields and not enough helicopters and soldiers to do the job. To stop the heroin couriers, the government has put heavily armed patrols on the roads. One tourist said his car was stopped and searched seven times between Acapulco and the American border. There have been several shootouts with heroin traffickers at the roadblocks, and two Mexican agents were killed only last month. But so far, the patrols have turned up more marijuana than heroin. Heroin is easier to conceal. And unlike marijuana, it has no distinctive odor.
Officials say privately that the outlook for stopping the flow of Mexican heroin into the United States is not good. Some fields are destroyed and some opium growers and heroin couriers are arrested, but these people are quickly replaced. This farmer's story is typical. He now faces 12 years in jail for growing opium. He told police that he is sick and old and hungry, and that he had no other way to support his wife and 9 children. For cultivating one crop, he could get $500, more cash than he had seen in a lifetime. The treasure of these mountains in the Sierra Madre once was gold. Now it is opium and heroin. Mexican officials say the poppies will continue to grow until the people here find a lawful way to make a living and a life. But right now, they say, there is no other way.
There's one further unsettling fact which Ira Silverman uncovered while producing that report. While most of the Mexican heroin is sold in the ghettos of the big cities, some of it is now being sold in smaller towns and on college campuses. In the words of the drug culture, a lot of kids who are dealing marijuana are now also dealing Mexican heroin. And so far, at least, turning off the Mexican connection is a problem far from an easy solution. Good night for NBC News.